I guess the first question is, it's an unusual number. We usually see things with that are round numbers. You divide, you can divide the number of years into the overall number and come up with something that's at least ends in a bunch of zeros. How come this one's kind of goofy? 58.17.
Yeah, I think the 3-4, it's Austin's number. It's a number of significance to him.
Oh, I see.
So that was important to their camp, and so we just found a way to kind of make it get there. But I certainly understand where the question comes from, but that's the answer.
So we had a chance to watch your news conference, you and Austin, earlier, but you'd appreciate that a lot of people getting out of work now didn't have a chance to hear it or see it. So I may ask you a few things you've already been asked here. One of the things you talked about in a more of a generic sense was you guys looked at everything from a 3-year deal to an 8-year deal. And you wound up at 5. Was this where you wanted to be? Or did you go into it with a predetermined number in your mind? What was your thought process?
No, we didn't go in with a predetermined number of years in mind, Bob. We'd examined a lot of the contracts in the past, and I think in recent history, a lot of them have been 8-year contracts. If you go back a decade or so and go through those Pittsburgh, Chicago, L.A. Contracts, they're mostly 5-year deals, some are 6. So we didn't go in constrained to having it be an 8-year deal or a 1-year deal. We more wanted to work through the process with Austin and his camp and figure out what was going to work best for us, knowing that we're fortunate to have a very good collection of talent here, and in a salary cap situation, we have to try to do everything we can to keep it together. So the term may not always end up being optimal. And when I say optimal, I mean the maximum amount it can be. And so for us, there's a trade-off in that we don't have it as an 8-year contract. For them, there's a trade-off, and it's 3 years less, and the AAV is less. But I think we were able to amicably work towards an agreement and make good progress here, especially in the last month. And that's kind of how it ended up where it went. But we didn't go in with any preconceived notion of where it would end up.
So the signing bonuses in this deal account for 90-something percent of it. $54.5 million of the $58.17 million is in signing bonuses. Tell me why that has become the modus operandi for not just the Toronto Maple Leafs, but for other guys as well. What's the real factor here?
I think most players and most people employed in general, if they could, would prefer to have their dollars up front. And for us, there are some benefits to doing so. We have the means here to do it. And I think, for us across a number of different contracts that we've done, it gets the players their dollars up front and maybe saves us in other areas, but also gives us greater flexibility with the contracts as well. So that's kind of the way that they've gone in a lot of these deals for these types of players in particular, coming out of their entry-level contract or any other contract are largely constructed this way.
So take a minute or so, because I know you understand this, and their side certainly does too. Are there tax implications, positive or negative, for Austin in signing a deal that is signing bonus heavy?
Well, I think that's more of a personal thing with Austin, but he's a U.S. resident. So when you're a U.S. resident and being from Arizona and Scottsdale as his hometown, there are various different things that you can do within the contract particularly because he is a resident there, to take advantage of them. But that's not something that I feel comfortable speaking about, because I think it's more of a personal matter for Austin, and probably a question better posed for his representation when they speak.
And we're going to talk to them, I think, tomorrow. But I'm just wondering, you must be aware of this and what the implications could be. Just in a generic sense, would you perceive that there are significant tax benefits to this kind of a deal over a salary structure deal?
Well, I think that the benefits of especially if you do qualify as a resident in a lower tax jurisdiction, I think it would be prudent, regardless of what that jurisdiction is, to be able to allocate your dollars there as much as you can. And of course, you have to qualify by spending the requisite number of days in that jurisdiction, whether sure. it's whether you're a Florida resident or an Arizona resident or really anywhere in the United States versus Canada in terms of taxation. Now, there are some high tax states in the NHL as well, whether it's California and New York that we compete with. But I think, you know, some other states are well known for being lower tax jurisdictions, and thus it's apt of the players and their representatives to try to maximize their dollars, because they're, you know, though the salary and the money is immense, the careers are relatively short. So I think that they've done an excellent job, and that was a lot of the discussion in the last day and days was working not only with the agents but with the finance people on making sure that Austin was set up well, not just for now, but for, you know, his retirement in the future.
Leafs General Manager Kyle Dubas is with us. Richard, jump in.
Yeah, Kyle, please email us Austin's tax accountant experts when you can. That sounds like a very interesting process. How much discussion, or how would you characterize the discussion when it comes to term between the Maple Leafs and Austin's camp? Would you say that one side was working with an eight-year framework to start and then moved? How would you, at least in terms of the specifics on term, how would you characterize that negotiation?
Yeah, I think in the beginning of all of these discussions, I mean, if you're certain about the player and the player is certain about the program that employs him, I think everyone looks to try to maximize their time together. With these younger players across all sports, you're buying up a lot of their prime. So unlike an older player where if you give them more years, the salary usually reduces, with a younger player, you're buying up the prime, so the AAV only increases. That's been the trend and the norm around hockey. So when we went into the discussion, I think everyone wanted to do an eight-year term, particularly Austin and his camp. They wanted to be here for the eight. We just couldn't find an AAV at that term that was going to best work for the club. And that's no slight to Austin or anything else. It just was the reality. We knew what our internal capabilities were and where we would need to get to. So then it was finding the term that would satisfy them on an AAV that would work for us. And that's what we spent the last month or months really chipping away at and working towards until we got to this point. And obviously during that time, a player sample size continues to grow and his performance metrics are expanded upon. And, you know, more of what you have, the more time you spend with anybody, no matter how long it is, the longer you're with them and the longer they perform, the more certain you are about their capabilities. And he's obviously had an excellent season for us again. So we're thrilled to get it done and for the city and for our organization to have him locked in here for 5.5 more seasons.
When you're doing a deal like this, how often do comparatives come up? You know, it's one thing to have a guy who's a kind of middle of the road player and the agent comes in and will say, well, he's better than this guy who got this and he's better than that guy who got that. And then you'll go back and say, yeah, but he's not as good as this guy who got this. And those kinds of back and forth. You're very limited with a player of Austin Matthews' skill and status
right.
in comparatives, aren't you?
Well, I think especially, Bob, the position that he plays as a center. So when you know, he's a franchise-type center, and he also scores goals at an elite rate, which is not all too common for a center. So there have been very few. There have been players who, obviously centers, who produce a lot of points, but very few that have scored at the rate that Austin has. And then if you go down one further to even strength goal production, he's right at the top again, and not just in the recent past, but going back. And so that's what made the comparable portion of it rather difficult. And, you know, there weren't a whole lot of people there. So you're looking at the very upper crust of players, and they're coming out of entry level system, you know, up to a decade ago, but very few players who kind of fit that bill. So you've kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's easier when there's a greater collection of comparable players in terms of production and position, and for him, there really isn't. So it was that's maybe what. Maybe if you want the deal done a little bit sooner, but when we're working through all of that, plus all the other matters that we discussed previous, it can lengthen the discussion a little bit.
Kyle, Mitch Marner's agent has said publicly they will not negotiate in season. When an agent and a player make that statement, how do you navigate that, understanding that you obviously want this player signed?
I think we respect them, Richard. I certainly understand why a player and his camp and his family would elect that option. They want to focus on playing hockey and focus on the season. And Mitch has had an outstanding season. He's been an excellent player for us now for three seasons. He's, as I've said today, his enthusiasm, his love of the game, love of being a Toronto Maple Leaf. You see it day in and day out, and we're very lucky to have Mitch. So I just think we focus on continuing to help Mitch reach his extraordinary potential and work with him. And doesn't affect the day-to-day for me and for us at all. And if it ever did, we'd have a discussion with Mitch and his people. But we just be respectful of their wishes. And once the season ends, we'll get to it.
Kyle, even if this was filed under exploratory, did any other organization at all this year make a call to you about either Austin or Mitch in terms of availability?
No, I think the only in pure joking terms. There was never any serious inquisition with us about either of those players. They would just kind of laugh and say, I'm calling regarding Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner, and then go, ha ha. And that was the end. So, yeah, nothing serious. And we're obviously thrilled to have them, fortunate to have them, and look forward to them being Maple Leafs a long, long time.
Mr. Dubas, that I have been suspicious of your ability to get all these things done that you said you want to get done and keep the core of this team, the high end of this team, together. Here's some math for you that I'm sure you're well aware of, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong on it. There are 14 players you currently have under contract for next year at a total of approximately $71 million. The cap will be $85 million. How are you going to fit this all in there? I mean, I know you have a plan. I know you have a board. I may not be the brightest bulb in the menorah, as they say, but I don't see it, pal. Is this concerning to you? I mean, you're going to have to do some juggling here.
I think, Bob, I understand your concern. You've done your research and I think the situation that we're in. I think that we talk about this every day. We've gone through it every day, really, going back years now. It's not been something that we say, okay, well, we'll get all these contracts and then we'll worry about it. It's a discussion that we have ongoing here daily. And predicting and prognosticating, we know that next season will be our toughest year. And then the salary cap has grown every year. So with that and different things that will occur and happen, we'll start to gain some breathing room. But I think next year the pressure to execute exactly what you've outlined falls solely on me and filling, the edges of our roster. As you just outlined it, it's essentially $14 million on across six bodies to field the team each night. And once we kind of get through this next stretch and get into the summer, we'll have more certainty on our other restricted free agents and the pressure to fill around the edges of the roster and make sure that we're performing well will fall directly on me. And I know that's what myself and our management team will be judged by and what the fans and the media should be judging us on. So I'm excited about it. We work extremely hard at it. We're not going to be right all the time or a lot of the time, but it's trying to be more right than wrong and give our coaches and our players who've done such a great job this season and in the past the ability to keep reaching their potential, and that's what we'll keep working towards.
Kyle, what percentage would you put on additional trades or transactions prior to February 25th?
Ooh, I don't know. We continue to think to explore everything, Richard. It's so hard to put a percentage on it because you might feel like there's been some years whether it's been here or other places where I felt like we were 100% going to make a trade and improve the team. It didn't happen. Then other times where it was, a remote chance and we execute a deal. I think we've made a big addition already in Jake Muzzin that we're happy with, and we'll continue to explore all options that we have given the cap space that we have and the opportunities that we have to improve the team. I don't think we'll be constrained to one particular type of player or position. If we feel like we can improve our team and give this group of players and coaches the best chance, I think they've earned that. So we'll keep looking at it and exploring it at the same time. We're excited by our group and excited by the players that are developing below, and the fact that our players, the core of our team, is mostly very young, and we can expect them to continue to improve as it rolls along.
I understand you can't be specific, and I wouldn't expect you to be, but before we let you go, I got to ask you, how would you categorize the trade conversations you have had leading to the deadline? I know you don't have a long history of being the GM, but you were around with Lou. You know exactly how things kind of work. Is your perception that it is an active market or a passive market?
Well, there's lots of calls. It's just very similar to when Lou is here and observing him, and then Dave Nonis before that, Bob. Like, it's lots of calls going back and forth, teams trying to figure out, you know, find their way. There have been a lot of teams that that have played great of late that were previously on the outer edges of the playoff race. And so that's sort of changed the dynamic a little bit. There's been some teams that have made a strong charge of late and played very well. So that's changed things a little bit, but there's still lots of discussions ongoing, and we'll continue to be involved in those. But it's been always a fun, interesting process for me as a younger person and a first-time GM to learn from the other managers and how they handle this time and how they operate, whether they're buying or selling or just staying the same. It's always interesting to hear how they go through their process and then observe it. So good learning experience for me and for us, and we're looking forward to the next number of weeks and seeing how everything shakes down.
Well, you know, those of us here at Sportsnet will be watching carefully as we prepare for that day and the big shenanigans that are produced here by this television network. You know, the fan base is sitting on pins and needles waiting to see what you do. We congratulate you on getting the Matthews deal done, and we thank you very much for your time. I know it's a busy day. Hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Kyle. Richard. Thanks, guys.